Hello and welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. It's brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz. And joining me this week is Dr. Kim Allenbaugh. Now, she has just been named, or this past November, was named the regional chair of the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology for the Central Region of Hackensack Meridian Health. Good morning and welcome.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So you know your stuff about women and babies. I know you do. You have a lot of experience there. I see that you've delivered more than 5,000 babies. Is that right?
Well, I tell you, nobody sits around with a hashtag on that one in the middle of the night. But when you look back at how many years I was in practice, for about probably 21, 22, just that the volume, yeah, it was probably that. I know we had to bring in another file cabinet. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I if you threw 5,000 at me, I would say, wait a second, is that even possible in a lifetime? But if you do the math, yeah, I mean, with the amount of years you say you've been practicing,
it was a lot.
Well, welcome to Hackensack Meridian Health. You're in Middlesex County with us, and you're developing a women's care model that is super efficient, state of the art, and all encompassing. Tell us about that plan that you have when you came to Central Jersey and where you came from.
Oh, well, I hail from Missouri originally, and that's where I trained, and then did my residency in Kentucky, in Louisville. And so that was where I established a practice and established several practices, and culminating with amassing 35 doctors under one large practice with a hospital. And so one of the things I learned along the way was just how important it is to make women's care efficient. And for the people that you serve, women are busy and they mm-hmm. have so many responsibilities, towards our families and the community, et cetera. And so one of the things they tend to do is not take care of themselves. And so making it easy for them to take care of themselves, making it super efficient, and making the care very accessible is what I'm hoping to do here at JFK.
Yeah, so yeah, you come into JFK and it makes it easier for all the patients. That sounds great, and that's obviously one of the reasons that they brought you in. So this morning I want to touch on a lot of men, myself included, obviously don't know everything about the human body. So whether you've been with your partner for 12 months, 12 years, 20 years, 30 years, there's still a lot that they don't know, and I don't know what I don't know. So hopefully some of that will get flushed out, and I think a lot of our listeners will learn a lot during this conversation. What is it that men just don't get about women's bodies?
Well, I think that I think the whole kind of area is misunderstood. Mm-hmm. I think by women and men alike. It's one of those uncomfortable topics, that you carry that discomfort from grade school forward for some reason. Yet it's really, it should be one of the most easy things for us to talk about, because it's so important. It's so vital to our health as women. It's so vital to the health of the women that we love as men. One of the things that people need to understand is just the basic playing field. Let's talk about in the playing field.
Okay.
The playing field is that inside of a woman's abdomen, there are organs that are specifically delegated to reproduction. And so there's the uterus, okay, mm-hmm. and then there's the tubes, and then there's the ovaries. And that is inside of the abdomen. And then on the inside of the vagina, which is the other portal to anything female, there's the cervix, where a woman gets her pap smear done from or any kind of infection screening, and also the space where a baby would emerge if it didn't come out through a C-section through the abdomen. So that's kind of the playing field. But women can't just stop there. They also have to worry about their breast health. And overall, there's a lot of complex hormonal things that go on in a woman's body each month. And so the things that we don't know as far as in the lay public probably exceed the things that we do. But starting with just that basic knowledge of what's inside and what's outside helps us kind of decide, well, how can we help the people we love with problems they're having in any of those areas? And what are the things we should do to prevent those problems?
And one of these problems is cancer of the cervix, ovaries, uterus. How can you help your wife stay safe?
Well, one of the most interesting developments of late is the HPV vaccine. So one of the things that we learned was, you know, viruses are tricky little bugs. And one of the things that we've learned recently is that the viral reason that cancer occurs, especially with regards to the cervix, can be almost completely eradicated with the HPV vaccination. Now, given that, depending on what your age range is, because usually that vaccination is given up to the age of 26, but given what your age range is, you may or may not have gotten that. One of the things that guys need to know is that every time that you are intimate with someone, you are exposed to that HPV risk that they might bring from another relationship. Mm-hmm. And then you also have a tendency to take that HPV risk to another subsequent relationship. So so it's really important for guys to understand that in partners, that the HPV can really lead to cervical cancer if it's the high-risk type. Now, there are multiple types of HPV, and sometimes it'll come back, you know, on your partner's pap smear, and you'll think, oh, my gosh, what's that mean? You know, but it's kind of endemic in the population, the low-level ones, the ones that kind of everybody's got and not something you really need to worry about, just need to, you know, keep your eye on it. But when you get to those high-risk HPV viruses, if somebody you love has one of those found on their pap smear, make them, help them take that seriously. And and then recognize that if that is the case, and then subsequently you guys might separate and go to different relationships, that you probably are now a vector for that high-risk HPV. I think that's something that most guys, most women don't know.
Now, there's an HPV shot now that teenagers are getting. Does this, well, I'm sure it's not 100%, but does this eliminate those issues?
Yes. I mean, it does. Certainly nothing can ever be 100%. However, it is such a fantastic thing. And I think that, you know, one of the things that parents, I think, can be safe in assuming is that treating their children, giving their children that vaccine, is that, you know, you are markedly decreasing their risk of mortality due to invasive cervical cancer. And it is just, you know, it's a godsend, basically. Yet because it, you know, it's related to the cervix, it's related to sex, it's related to all those things that we don't want to talk about, a lot of times your pediatrician may not bring it up. And maybe your young daughter and son, because this is for both, you know, both sexes.
Right.
You've got to be very proactive on their behalf, because not only does it decrease the risk of cervical cancer, but also of cancers in the anal area. And any of those cancers are terrible. And if you could prevent that for your kids, gosh, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's interesting that you said that your pediatrician might not mention it. Now, I have twin boy-girl twins, and they're in their late teens now, but they've gotten the shot, and they got the shot because, well, we've heard about it, but the pediatrician did indeed suggest it. I'm surprised that there would be a pediatrician who wouldn't at least share that information.
I think, you know, everybody's got a comfort level, and I'm with you. I would hope that every doctor would bring that forward as a possibility. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we have a tendency to do as parents is underestimate the sexual activity of our kids, right? Because then that means, oh, maybe they're growing up. And because we think, oh, well, they're not active yet or whatever, we don't need to seek that anything out that's related to sex. Quite honestly, the smartest parents seek it out before. Because this is all about protecting the people that you love. And so it's so that when that time of their life comes, and even if it comes prematurely or whatever, in your opinion, they're protected.
Right.
Right. And it's super important. And I remember when I was in Texas for a while, we had a big push there. And just as an example of just within the same state of how there's different understandings of it in the western part of the state, there is in El Paso, 99%, you know, of the young women and men in the age range receive the shot. Whereas in Dallas proper, probably less than 50.
Okay.
And it has to do with the promotion by the pediatrician. So parents have to be super, super proactive on their kids' behalf.
We're speaking with Dr. Kim Allenbaugh, and she is the regional chair of the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology for the Central Region of Hackensack Meridian Health. And at the top of the interview, we want to talk about things that maybe men don't understand about women. So let's get into about getting pregnant, getting your partner pregnant. What are some reasons that either a couple cannot get pregnant or have difficulty conceiving?
Well, one of the things that if you and your partner are looking to conceive, a couple things to help your partner and to do yourself, help your partner with and to do yourself. One, stop smoking. There's really good data on smoking's inhibition on the ability to conceive and also a potentially unhealthy effect surrounding conception, an unhealthy effect on the embryo. The other thing is that help your partner be in their optimal physical health, exercise. You just want to make sure that you're kind of laying this really well-supported, fertile groundwork. Now, then when you actually start to, proceed towards conception and do the work of conceiving, the point that a lot of people need to understand is that there's a timing issue. Everybody's been taught from grade school that, you ovulate on the 14th day of your cycle. Well, true and untrue. The average cycle length for a woman can be anywhere from 24 days to 35 days, okay? And what usually happens is that you ovulate 14 days before your period happens, okay? But that's a retrospective viewpoint, right? It's not that you ovulate on the 14th day. So I have a lot of couples that'll come in after a year of trying, and they're just disheartened. And they're like, look, we're doing all these, we're taking these ovulation kit tests, et cetera, et cetera. Here's what I'd tell them to do. I would say, first of all, the ovulation kit tells you a little too late, okay? When you ovulate, there is this kind of a five-day window. The window starts to open, right? Mm-hmm. And the cervical mucus becomes really thin, and so the sperm slide through there more easily and don't have as many barriers to meeting an egg. If you will keep that in mind for that interval. So the way I tell people to do this is, look, after about day 10, just start having sex every other day, okay? You can have sex every day if you want to, but at least every other day, because then you're not going to miss that window. And missing the window is important because what happens if you wait for that ovulation kit to turn positive, sometimes you're too far in, and suddenly when the window starts to close, it closes rapidly. And so you might be there on the 14th day of your cycle, mm-hmm. but your window is really open between, days 9 and 14, right. Or 9 and 13, right?
Okay.
So you missed it. So I would just say make it easy, have sex every other day from day 10 to about day 20, and you're going to have success.
Right. Don't try and pick the one day because it could vary. I mean, it's not exact is what you're saying.
Absolutely not exact. Plus, little swimmer guys can live inside the cervix up to 5 days. So if you've got the wrong date, they'll still be there tomorrow.
Okay, let's talk about, let's say there is, after sex, there seems to be an odor, an inexplicable odor.
Here's the deal. Sometimes there's an infection, okay, or a colonization. It's really not an infection, and it's easily treated. That usually precedes, sex. So if that's going on, then the woman will know it, and it's like, wow, I've got to do something about this. And it's really easy to treat with antibiotics. And often the partner will have to be treated as well because it's one of those, ping pong kind of things. This is just called bacterial vaginosis. You could have certain other diagnoses that actually need to have antibiotic treatment. But what we're talking about with this post-sex kind of thing is more like what's called bacterial vaginosis. And it's really all about the pH. So even most women don't know that the inside of their vagina, the pH, is a low number, meaning it's more acidic than it is alkaline. But guess what the pH of semen is? Well, it's alkaline. So what happens is if there is this homeostasis inside of a woman's body, and it trends more towards that acidic kind of pH, and then all of a sudden you put, semen and sperm in there. Well, it takes it to a different pH. And at that pH, the normal bacteria in the woman's vagina can start to grow. And when they grow, they create an amine odor, which has a little bit of a fishy smell to it.
Okay.
So how do you handle that? One of the things that you can do is after sex, get up, go to the bathroom. Okay? Just go empty your bladder and just basically kind of wash the area just very gently and don't use soap, because guess what is the most alkaline thing you can use in that area? Bar of soap. Bar of soap has a pH of like, 10 or 12. I mean, it's totally alkaline. So try to not put a lot of chemicals in the area. Try to make sure you empty your bladder afterwards. And then if necessary, talk to your doctor about some post-sex medications that you can use, especially if you're menopausal, because as a woman ages, her body becomes more alkaline. And so it's a much bigger problem for a menopausal woman than a young woman.
You mentioned soap. Don't use soap. But what you should never wash with soap?
Well, I don't want to say that, right? Because, you need to stay clean. But here's the deal. A lot of women won't use soap on their faces. Why? Well, because it's drying and it's of the wrong pH, and they will still get their faces quite clean, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is that when women get this condition post-sex, well, they think, oh, my gosh, it means I'm not being clean enough, right? And so they go and then they increase the alkalinity of the area, which makes it worse, right? So my advice would be you can get real clean with water and just a tiny, tiny bit, maybe a soap on your fingers, but you don't need it, because a lot of things in our body are self-cleansing, right? In the olden days, our moms or grandmas were taught that they had to do things like douching, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
to clean the inside of the vagina, because that was their responsibility. The thing is, it's the vagina's responsibility. It'll clean itself. Just don't mess up the pH. And using a lot of soap in the area and a lot of creams and a lot of, additional stuff just messes up the pH.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. All right, let's move on to periods. What guys don't know about their partner when it comes to their periods. One of them, I think, is a myth. And that is when, quote unquote, that time of the month comes around, women are more irritable, and that's what causes it. That's not always true, is it?
Well, here's the thing. Certainly, there are changes in hormones, okay, that some women may be more sensitive to than others. Because all of a sudden, you've had this good hormonal support, and then as your period starts, boom, it just drops out from under you, right? And sometimes those rapid changes, some women are particularly sensitive to that, okay? And they might also have developed premenstrual syndrome problems, where it's just uncomfortable. For them, it is not a natural, easygoing event like, breathing in, breathing out. It becomes really difficult in the face of their day-to-day lives. They're bloating, or their headaches, or backaches, or other things. So one of the things that's really important is to separate just simple, irritability, because there have been some changes in hormones, with real discomfort, and to address those, because sometimes the reason for the discomfort is because you have endometriosis, let's say. And
okay.
when you have your period, what happens is the lining of the inside of the uterus sloughs, okay? Now, if you're on the pill, you'll find that the amount of lining, you just don't make very much. And so that's why women like often to be on the pill, because their periods, which might have been really heavy and really oppressive.
Right, they're lighter on the pill.
Racing to the bathroom. Right, racing to the bathroom all the time. Those periods suddenly become easier to handle because there's less volume, right? There are some birth control methods like the IUDs, et cetera, that remove the periods altogether. Now, that doesn't mean it stays up inside you. It just means that you're not making that endometrial lining, so it doesn't have to slough. Sometimes that lining gets on the outside of the uterus. And so we started this whole thing by talking about inside that lower abdomen, there's some organs, right? And they sit inside of a space. If the lining of the uterus gets out on the walls of that space, or a piece of it goes on the intestine by the bowels, then when that woman is bleeding on the outside, she's also bleeding from those spots on the inside. And it's especially uncomfortable. So, and what you might find also with those women who have endometriosis at the time of that cycle is that sex is super, super painful, because there's a certain spot that is flared up on the inside that is also bleeding on the inside. So relative to irritability, well, it depends. sometimes that can happen with the changes of hormones. It doesn't have to. And if somebody's really, really suffering from it, there are a lot of things that they can work with their doctor, a lot of treatments, both homeopathic and also medication, that might help.
There are some women who maybe sleep all the time and their partner notices this, doesn't dress up anymore, doesn't put on makeup anymore. It sounds like depression, but there could be other factors, and the guy's thinking, what did I do wrong?
You know, it's one of those things where the best thing that a guy could do for the person that they love is be aware, right? And sometimes it's hard to be aware. And when things change and you see things and you can't explain them, right? One of the things that we all do is, you know, as parents, et cetera, is we think, well, it's something that we've done, or we have a tendency to offer advice for how that person should deal with it, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But probably the most important thing that we should do, maybe, is say, I see this, and I see you're not, I see that you're sleeping, and I see you're, you know, not feeling well. You know, do you want to talk about it, et cetera? Because if somebody is dealing with depression, and let's be honest, of late, especially with COVID, the incidence of depression, has gone up dramatically. The incidence of postpartum depression for women who have delivered babies through the time of COVID has gone up dramatically. And any time that, you know, you have a life-altering event, right, those things, people process those differently. So one of the things that happens with depression in women and in men, but it's these feelings of helplessness, hopelessness, and worthlessness, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you find that this, you know, usually vital person in your life just cannot get up and get going, well, that's kind of what we call energia. It's just I cannot move my body through space and time. And one of the things is that people have a tendency to go, well, if you got out of bed, if you went and did something, you would feel better. The thing about that is that at your least, you're now at your least able, right? You feel terrible, you're least able. You couldn't do that before you went down this dark hole of depression. How could you possibly do it while you're in that hole? So what we've got to do as caretakers is help those folks get in contact with professionals, right, who can assist. But also, I think we're all responsible for each other in helping us, each of us, maintain good mental health, right? You know, we don't just go outside and exercise so we'll look buff in a bathing suit. We don't just make sure that we take walks and make sure that we eat right and make sure that we try to avoid alcohol, et cetera, just because, well, you know, those are the right things you do. All of those things together have a tendency to help us with our mental health as well. And one of the most vital is interactions with other people. So COVID's taught us anything, we need to get out. We need to get outside.
Yeah.
We need to get out with people. And we need to reestablish. And so I think it's just being mindful of our partners, not being judgmental because it's the last thing they need, and really promptly trying to connect them with somebody that might help, a healthcare provider, their OBGYN, their family practice, their internist, whomever.
Dr. Kim Allenbaugh, a lot of good information there. We are out of time. I think we need to book you for a second show because there's a lot that I wanted to get to that we didn't get to, but very interesting. And certainly, you know, the goal was to try and find out some things that men might not know about women's bodies. And I think we accomplished that, but I think there's a lot more that we can get into. So I'd love to have you back for another show in the future.
Well, thank you, Joel. I'd love to do it. You know, women are just, they take care of everybody. And they're not very good at taking care of themselves, so they need a little help.
Yes, yes. That's exactly right. It really is. Just about every woman I know, every woman in my family is like that. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Kimberly Allenbaugh. She is the regional chair of OBGYN at Hackensack Meridian Health. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much, Joel. Bye-bye.
This has been JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz. For a podcast of this show, you can go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. For more information, you can always call 844-HMH-WELL or go to hackensackmeridianhealth.org.